So glad that you're here. We're right on week two, kind of in the heart of this series we started last week called Exodus. And so we're looking at this Old Testament book. This is one of those books that can be an intimidating book. If you open it up, chapter one, it starts out with lineage. So it's basically gives you the family tree. And what we learned, though, last week in our introduction, we really took the book more and looked at it from a historical standpoint. When was it written? Who wrote it? We know Moses wrote it. But the book starts with the word and now. And so we see that Genesis was really kind of the how God created the world. We know the creation story in 7 days. And Bob Dylan said God gave names to all the animals, right? You've heard that song. That's the book of Genesis. And then Exodus was how God created a nation. And that's where the law came, the Mosaic law. That's where we begin to see order and organization. That's where we see Egypt and the nation of Israel begins to develop. And so it's very relevant to today and where we are. The book means exit. Exodus is the Hebrew word for exit. And so it has a lot to do with transition. It has a lot to do with moving from maybe A to B. For the children of Israel, it was from Egypt to the promised land. And I think everybody has a promised land. I don't think promised land's heaven. I've heard it said that it's heaven, when everybody will be happy over there. And I think that's true. But I think God has a promised land for you on this side. Two people will agree with that. I just believe that. There's no giants in heaven. Come on, somebody, right? They had to fight giants to get into the promised land. And so God has a promised land for you. God has an Egypt, right? Well, you know what your Egypt is. Whatever tells you to do, what you don't want to do. That's what Pharaoh was. He told them when to eat, sleep, what they were going to wear, when they were going to work, when they weren't going to work. It's a picture of a slave driver. They had no freedom. And so all of us can relate to that in some form, right? We were a kid at one time, right? You had to do what your mom and dad said. There's somebody here that spanked me when I was in high school. God bless you for doing it, too, because I needed it, man. I didn't like the in-school suspension, so I just started getting the spankings. They used to do that back in the day. Yeah, they don't do it anymore, I'm sure, but I just didn't want to sit in in-school suspension because I didn't want to stay afterwards because I wanted to go surfing. And so I always would just wear, 15 pairs of shorts when I knew. And then they switched it up on me one time. And so they went weeks without the spankings, and I'm thinking, okay, they forgot. The spanking inventory must be so high, they're just going to start forgiving spankings. You know what I mean? Like, maybe, and they didn't. And I was wearing board shorts that morning, and I will never forget that. But spare the rod, spoil the child. Come on, right? I'm thankful that I didn't have to stay after school. No, I'm just kidding. So anyways, but we all have things in our life that shows up on our resolution list normally once a year. It's the stuff that we have fought maybe since we were kids. It's all these things that we have. So Pharaoh maybe isn't just external. Sometimes it can be things in our own life. But today is I've been looking forward to today because it's we're going to jump straight into this. And so if Genesis is the original story, Exodus is kind of the second season. In the book of Genesis, they had one rule. Adam and Eve, it was perfect. The garden was perfection. God came down every morning and talked with Adam and Eve like we're talking right now. They could recognize God. They walked with him in the cool of the day. One rule. Don't eat of this tree. Right? This tree, don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You can have all the other stuff. Well, there was one rule. The book of Exodus now is, there's a little more rules involved. And so if Genesis was about an apple and forbidden apples, Exodus is about forbidden appetites. You know what I'm talking about, right? those things, internal things. And so what we see here in our story and what I love about the story that we're going to pick out of Exodus, there's 40 chapters, there's hundreds of stories. We took Paul, we took the Apostle Paul and the four stories that he picked. He talked about this book in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And so I'm going to take the four stories that he gave. So last week was an introduction. This week we're going to talk about the golden calf. Next week, we're going to talk about some seducing, and then there's some snakes, and then there's some loose lips sink ships. So that's my version of the stories, but we're going to talk about those stories. And here's our theme verse, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, because this is about Exodus. This is Paul's description of the book of Exodus, the Apostle Paul. Now, these things occurred, what we're going to be studying together, as an example to keep us, and I want you to just file this, to keep us from setting our hearts on evil things. So it's not about behavior modification. Paul draws a really strong connection here. So as we go through these things and we look at all of these different instances where people in the Bible really messed it up and how can we learn from it, Paul says it's not about behavior modification. It's something internal. Their hearts got set on the wrong things. And then here's the first story, verse 7. He gave four examples. Don't be idolaters as some of them were. As it was written, the people sat down to eat and drink, and then they got up to play. That's the King James Version. They got up to indulge in revelry. And what I want you to see about that, number one, is there anything wrong with eating? Is there anything wrong with drinking? Anything wrong with having fun? Right? It's not like a negative connotation to that word. But what happened is, let's read the story here. In Exodus, Moses, they really didn't have a law to this point. As I told you, Genesis, there was one rule, don't eat of the tree. Well, they did it and they messed up, right? And now the story just keeps going. And we know Joseph ends up in Egypt. And now all millions of people end up in Egypt in slavery. And now they're on the run. So they've left the only leader that they've known. And they don't really have a set of rules. And at the time, when they came out of Egypt, they didn't even know the name of God. Because Moses, when God called Moses the burning bush, yeah, we talked about it. Well, God called Moses out of a burning bush. And Moses said, well, who do I tell him has sent me? Because Moses didn't know the name of God. They knew him as the God of Abraham, Isaac. You know, I don't know. You know, it's who is this God? He says, the God, just tell him that I am that I am sent you. And so we're getting all this stuff for the first time. These folks are getting all this for the first time. And now they've just escaped Egypt. They came through the Red Sea. I mean, miracle after miracle, 10 plagues. I mean, incredible. They make movies out of this stuff. 40 days, they get into the wilderness. And they start having problems. And so Moses is thinking, okay, I got to get some rules here. Because this was Moses' job. There was 300,000 men, I believe, that came out of Israel with Moses. Some scholars believe it was around 2 million people. Moses was a leader of all of them. And so if you've ever led like a soccer club voluntarily, right? If you've led Little League baseball, if you've led anything in your life, you know 2 million disgruntled people that are all family. I mean, I wouldn't want that job. No wonder God had to burn a bush up and speak to him, and then 10 plagues, and then, you know, like, I mean, that just sounds like things could get really complicated, and it got really complicated. Moses went away. We don't know how long he was gone, but Moses went away. He went up on Mount Sinai. This is where our story for today picks up in Exodus 32. But I want you to think about all of this and what they have just seen a few days before here, this story we're about to read. They've seen God literally show up in miracles and signs and wonders that the whole Jewish calendar is set around Passover. It's our whole lives, the gospel, is connected to what they've seen with their own eyes. And then a few days go by, and their leader's gone, and this is what happens. Verse 1, Exodus 32, the people saw that Moses took a little bit longer than they thought it was going to take. He didn't come down from the mountain, so they gathered around Aaron. That's kind of the VP. Moses is the president. Aaron was his VP. They gathered around Aaron. Hey, Aaron, come make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses, he did a pretty good job at first, but I think it's time for him to retire. He's old. Who brought us out of Egypt? You know, that was his legacy. We don't know what's happened to him, but for you, Aaron answered and said, take off the gold earrings of your wives, your sons, and your daughters. take them and bring me all the gold. All gold, bring all everything that's gold, bring it to me. So all the people took off their earrings and brought them to Aaron. He took what they had handed him and he made it into an idol, cast into the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. Then they said, "These are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt." When Aaron saw this, he went ahead and built an altar around it. This looks pretty good. Built it in front of the calf and announced, "Tomorrow we're going to have a feast." So the next day, the people rose up early. Here's our verse from Corinthians. Sacrificed burnt offerings, presented fellowship offerings. Afterwards, they sat down to eat, to drink, and then they got up to play. But it was centered around something else this time. And so meanwhile, at the bottom of Sinai, that's going on. At the top of Mount Sinai, Moses is up there having this face-to-face encounter with God. God's writing on tablets. And rule number one, y'all know rule number one? They should have no other gods before me. And then rule number two is don't make images either out of them, right? And so as all this is happening, it's incredible to me the timing. You know, some of the things I've never seen in this story is the fact that Moses sat down and heard millions of people complain, and he probably got tired of it. They were bringing all their problems to Moses now. Before, it was Egypt. So now they don't know who to bring their stuff to. And so Moses was sitting down trying to bring peace to the people, and then finally God brought him up on a mountain and said, "Let me help you out with this. Thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not." And you take these Ten Commandments, that really the Mosaic laws, we know it, and God built a nation out of that. It's amazing. But if we were there in the moment, I think, I don't know if we'd understand what was going on. And so as Moses is up there and the people are down having this Club La Vila at the bottom of Sinai, they are having a great time at the bottom of the mountain. And so let's just watch the progression. I didn't put this in the notes, but I wanted to just give you what I seen happened. With Moses, you know, Moses was the guy in charge. He was a leader. Aaron was kind of his VP. And so as soon as Moses was gone, immediately the people started talking. And I know everyone in here, at some point, you've lived long enough to have transitions, and you've lived long enough in organizations to see where there is a real temptation when the leader maybe is not present or the leader is not capable to try to do things and maneuver things on your own. And so if we can back it way up, the way John Maxwell says it is everything rises and falls on leadership. And so Moses left Aaron in charge, and Moses went up, and Aaron may have liked it a little bit too much. I don't know. Now the people are coming to him. Moses is gone. And so they're asking him to lead them, asking him to take this role over. And so Aaron complied. And the first thing that I see in this story is that when Moses leaves, the first real, like, I think, beginning of the end was they immediately went after the leader. Let's appoint a new one. And we see this happen over and over, even we're seeing it happen in so many countries right now, but this is nothing new, where leaders raise up and leaders come down. The way that God says that he appoints kings, and then the heart of the king is in the hand of our God. And so we've seen this happen for thousands of years. People have come, people have gone. But the one unique thing about this is this is the first mention of it. And I think everyone has been impacted by this. The greatest lesson I feel like I've ever learned in church leadership, but this is across the board, is what do you do when you're serving a leader who you think or know that you can do a better job than them? Have you ever been there? You have a boss, and it's just you're getting tired of listening to that boss. And he's just there because he's got seniority, and it's the good old boy system, and he got promoted because he knows the other boss. And now here you are. You're better at your job. Your performance is better. Everything is better. Now you got to report to them. Nobody in here ever had that happen. And the lesson for me was, are you able to serve when you know you're capable of leading? Because if you're not, you're not capable of leading. And so Aaron learned a hard lesson right here. And we got a great story out of it. And so we're going to keep reading it. But that was number one, because you know what happened after that? As soon as Aaron obliged to that, he said, okay, I guess Moses is gone. I'm going to take over the reins here. Then they wanted to replace God. And so it was never really about replacing Aaron or Moses. It was about there was something happening deeper underneath. And then the third thing that happened that we see is they literally created this image. Now, this is what's spectacular to me. I've never seen this. Never seen this. Why a golden calf? Have you ever thought about that? The story says that they took all the gold, everything that was gold, threw it in the furnace, and then just voila, this golden calf. And that's another thing that Aaron doesn't tell the complete truth in. Because in Exodus 32, when he's telling it to Moses, he said, Moses, I just threw the gold in, and this calf came walking out. You know, I didn't do it, we just read it. He shaped it. He formed it. He fashioned it. But why a cow? Or, you know, check this out. Moses begins to describe the people. Moses comes down from the mountain. He's mad. Throws the tablets down. Breaks in half. God says, let's just kill them all and start over. No joke. That was God's first idea. Idea one, kill them all, start over. Moses is like, no, hang on. And then he starts describing them. They're stiff-necked. They don't have any boundaries. They're quickly to go astray. They're just unleadable people. He's describing a heifer that gets out of the flock. He's describing a golden calf, cow. My mom lives out in the country. She called me a few weeks ago. And they got cows across the street. And she said, Nathan, I've got to go. I'm running around. Mrs. Jones' cows are out. And we called everybody in the neighborhood. And they're out there on four-wheelers, 15 trucks. They're getting around. They're rounding up these cows, you know. And Moses describes them to a T like a little calf that has rebelled and run away from the flock. Stiff-necked. It's an agricultural term. And this is the point. When we begin, whatever we center our lives around, we begin to imitate. There's a reason why worship is so critical. There's a reason why worship can't be replaced with anything else. Because whatever we worship, we become like. And the idol that they built was just a manifestation of what was already going on inside of their spirit. Is that good? And so this idol just came out of what was already kind of happening internally. G.K. Bill says it like this, what we worship, we become like. And he's way smarter than me. This guy's wrote a book on the book of Exodus like this thick. He wrote a book also, it's titled, basically, What We Worship, We Become. And so this concept of worship is so important, and it goes even deeper than that, because worship is, I don't think worship really has anything to do with the expression so much, because I was raised Catholic. And I remember coming to church, and I remember there's Catholics that loved God with all their heart, and the way that they worship is really different than the way we worship. And so expression's different flavors for different folks, right? Some people like it chocolate, some people like it vanilla. Some people like it all three, metropolitan, come on. You know, and we have people that do that. They'll go to the Catholic church, then they'll come here and sit in the back kind of scared for a little bit. You know, like, what's going on here? And that's cool, and we want that. We welcome that. The church should be a blend of everyone. The worst thing that happened was denominations to the church. Every denomination has schismed the church. And all it is this is, normally it's, well, you worship that way, we're going to worship this way. You like big buildings, we like small buildings. You like to sing hymns, we like to sing this. But it's all a part of the body. It's all a part of the capital C church. So it's not so much expression. Martin Luther said it, the best definition I've seen of worship is whatever your heart clings to for ultimate security. When it looks like the sky is fallen and the Chicken Little, right? The world is over. Where do you go? Do you create your own God real quick so you can control it? Do you turn back to Egypt? I've done it many a times. Security, I had security in my old life. I had security in some of these habits and things that I'm now, here I am in the wilderness and they're still showing up. I wish that everything got deleted when they came through the Red Sea, but it didn't. And so when the going got tough, the first thing they tried to do was go back to Egypt. They were like, hey, at least we had good food there. We had leeks and onions and quail and all this stuff. And then the second thing they did was try to control and make God in their own image. It's getting real quiet in here. But there's good news. Y'all want the good news? So they created this golden calf. I described the problem good enough to you. Yeah, I don't like stopping on the problem. I want to give you the solutions here because there's solutions. And I think we've all found ourselves at this point, whether we want to realize it or not. I know I have. That's why I've laid down stuff in my life before for no reason. This was when I was right out of high school. I remember nobody told me to. I just felt like I needed to stop surfing because I had missed Thanksgivings. And I've quit 5 jobs, and my relationships were rocky a little bit because I'll be there unless the surf's good, you know. And you can't do anything in life like that, you know what I mean? Like you gotta be able to be there when you say you're gonna be. So it was clearly an idol. My whole life rotated around it, my schedule. So I laid it down because there's this tendency, I think, as human beings that we cling to things, but we'll imitate what we're closest to. And so Moses comes down from the mountain. He's upset. God was about to kill them all. Moses said, hang on. And so Moses steps in, and there was a clear separation that happens. I want you to see that. There was a clear separation that happened, but there's 3 things that Moses did, and that's really what I want to focus on this morning. This is what I want to give you. This is how Moses corrected the ship. If you ever feel like your life gets off track, if you need direction, right? The children of Israel, they had no direction. They were centering their life around this golden image that they made out of some earrings that day. If you ever, and I'm telling you, I mean, when you really need direction, you'll listen to anybody. Right? I mean, when you really get into a bad spot, and so Moses came down, he was so upset, and before, like, the whole let's kill them all thing happens, he backs up, and this is what he does. I'm going to read it, and I think there's 3 things in here that we can all do. This is Exodus 33, he took his tent, and he pitched it outside of the camp. Look at that. Some distance away. So number one, and this is, I think, these are healthy habits, these are holy habits. Every person can do this, and I believe that if you do this, these are so practical, you will clearly hear from God. Get back on track is separate yourself regularly. Now, we've heard a million versions of that. We've heard the holiness version of that. Don't smoke, don't chew, don't run with those who do. All right? Don't cut your hair, don't wear, you know, you got to dress a certain way, you got to act a certain way, you can't go to the movies, you can't listen to secular music. That is not what I'm talking about. It's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is separating yourself from your world regularly. How often do you get out of your world regularly? There's a clear separation when we say yes and we start serving God, there's a clear separation that happens. But nobody told me to do that. I just felt this drawing. It was this, I don't want to do those things anymore. But it came from separating. Moses needed to hear from God. Moses knew, okay, I got to get some things back on track here. This is incredible to me. In the book of Exodus alone, you know how many times Moses went up to Mount Sinai? Just this one mountain, 8 times. Okay, this was not a one-time occurrence where Moses runs up to Mount Sinai. This was a habit, y'all. This was a part of Moses' life. He separated himself regularly. That's probably why Aaron took the opportunity to step in and say, this Moses guy, you know what I mean? Here he is running up the mountain every day. Who knows what he's doing up there? He's burning the bush, whatever. And then he runs back down, or talking to bushes, and then he runs back down. And so this was a part of his life. He was separate. He was getting quiet. When was the last time you were quiet for just 1 hour with yourself? In my men's group last week, the leader of the group was sharing about one of his mentors, and he was going on a spiritual retreat this weekend for 48 hours. And he was just going to go away. He got permission from his wife, and he said, I just really need direction. And he talked about his mentor, and his mentor said, I'm not going to continue to mentor you unless you can get 2 days a quarter where you can get silent. I thought, that's good advice. Because it's so noisy. And that's why I think coming to church is so important. And I hope that this can be a place like that. It's a sanctuary. It's why they built it this way. It's beautiful. It's like the upside down. It's like a boat upside down. So the same engineers that would build boats built these old churches. And so you're safe in here. It's a sanctuary. It's a place where you can separate yourself from your world and find some peace and find some stillness. One pastor said it like this, come apart for a while, or you'll come apart in a while. And I don't mean go and rent a cabin and get on Netflix for 48 hours. That is not what I mean. Don't go and go glamping and have your own Facebook all day. You know, look at these, you know, pictures and, you know, no. Like alone, quiet. I mean, I'm real big on getting untethered from all electronics. Like, when's the last time nobody could reach you for 24 hours? Think about it. You're like, I can't. There's no way. You know, there's no way I can do it. I get it. I understand. But I think it's important. I think it's critical. It's in the stillness. It's in the silence that God speaks the loudest. And my goal for you is not to hear from God for me, but to train you to have an ear to hear from God for yourself. And the only way is to get quiet. The only way is to slow down. Hurry is not of the devil. Hurry is the devil. The faster you go, the less you're going to see, the less you're going to hear, the less you're going to be able to be sensitive to what God is doing. And I think that's also a part of this story. They were in a hurry. They didn't want to wait on Moses. They were ready for the promised land. Let's go there right now. Let's get there quick. If we got to leave Moses behind, let's leave him behind. It's all about the company. What's best for all of us? It was out of step with what God was doing. And the only way to get back in step is Moses. He came in, he said, took his stuff, went across, left Mount Sinai, and this is the second thing he did. We'll read it to you first. It says that he went across, and then whenever Moses went out, verse 8, to the tent, all the people stood up, and they rose at the entrance of their tents, and they watched him. That's interesting to me. He separates himself from the millions of people that he's leading, but he's not far enough away to where they don't know where he's at. And so I was like, Lord, what does that mean? And I think this is what it means. Moses was just injured really bad. I mean, if you've been betrayed before, or if you've had a number two that you've been grooming, or a VP, or you've had a partner that left and split the company in half, when you've been hurt, I mean, think about that. Normally, the reaction is, I'm done. I'm leaving this industry completely over. Or, I'm not going to trust anybody anymore. I'm not going to listen to anybody anymore. That's what I get for trusting Aaron. I should have did it on my own. And so I think this is the key here, and why God put that there in that detail. It's that the second thing is we got to stay open to accountability, and we got to stay open to feedback. We got to have people in our lives that are watching our lives. Not Facebook, not the best version of what we want everybody to see. They were watching the messy part of Moses' life. him going to the bathroom, him eating, him drinking. They were watching his whole life. Now, that sounds crazy, but it meant that he was accountable to somebody. And I think the key is that we can only be as free as we are accountable. And when we have accountability, when we're in groups, I love coming to church. This is awesome, meeting in this building and being together. But I think there has to be a deeper level of this. There has to be somebody who you can sit down with and connect. Every David needs a Jonathan, right? Every Paul needs a Timothy. That we need people in our lives that we're accountable to and that can speak into our lives. And we will, let me say it like this. How good are you at receiving feedback? And in a culture of criticism, it feels like an attack, too, sometimes. Because everybody, you do anything now, there's 10 critics before one person compliments it. And so when there's a person in your life that you're accountable to and they give you feedback, sometimes it can, but it's the only way, I think, that we grow. It's the only way that we get better. It's the only way that God can, it's iron sharpens iron. There's no short version of it. There's no, I think, quick road to it. It's a daily journey with the people in our lives, and we're open and we're accountable. One of the only books I can remember from the little bit of training I had in seminary was a book called Why Great Men Fall. And they studied all these executives and all these, in the secular world, but also in the church world of pastors. And we read about it all the time. It happens. Pastors are people. Amen. They are sheep. They are no different than anyone. Like, I don't even like the fact that it's up here on a platform. I'd rather be down here, chilling, just sitting with you. Like, that's how they did it in the temple. Can y'all see me on the screen? We're on the same level. And anytime you idolize a person, you'll eventually demonize them. And we do this all the time, and we do it with pastors, and we'll do it with people, and so we want to stay out of that, because we're all in this thing together. Can I get an amen? We're all in it together. There's no like elevation to it. It's just our heart beats the same way, our blood bleeds the same way. There's no difference. And here's the third thing I want to give you that I think was important. I forgot the movie. I forgot to tell you about the book, didn't I? Why Great Men Fall. Here's the whole point of this book, and this is what I took away. There was a common denominator in all of these. And this is tough stuff, I know, but I want to help you. The common denominator was this, that nobody could talk to the person. They were unapproachable. They had gotten so important at what they did, or they had gotten so separated from feedback and accountability that nobody was looking at their work and observing their work and what they were doing. Accountability and feedback. What we measure, we can improve. What we're monitoring, we can improve. You've heard experience makes you better, but I don't think it's just experience. It's evaluated experience. It's when somebody is watching your life, somebody is speaking, not to criticize you, but to help you. It's having a coach. It's just the way. I mean, one of the things I love about Tiger Woods, I like Tiger Woods. When he won the majors for the first, the Masters for the first time. You know what he did the next morning? He trained. He called his train, and he got on a harder program than what he was already on. And so it's accountability, it's feedback, it's coaches, it's mentors, it's having those people that will spank you. Come on, you know what I'm saying? When you get out of line, because it's either that or it'll be in the corrections facility, right? Or it'll be in the, you keep moving up. Accountability and feedback. If we get to the point where we can't receive feedback and we don't want to be accountable, it's a dangerous place to be. We never graduate from needing accountability and feedback. We never graduate from needing people that's watching our lives to help contribute and to not only that, but to enrich it. And then here's my favorite part of this whole story, and we're going to close. The band can come on back up. So Moses separated himself. He change of pace, change of place. He got quiet. He went on a sabbatical. He honored the Sabbath. He took whatever, he separated himself. He had accountability and feedback. He had people that were pouring into his life. And then this is what happened. It says that God came down, and it said the Lord would speak to Moses. This is so awesome. Face to face. Just as we're talking right now as a friend. And I think this is the key here, and we're going to pray. Is sometimes, you know, trouble will come into our lives, and trouble will have a purpose. And in this story, we could focus on the golden calf, and we can focus on, you know, there was a lot of things that happened, and they got off the path. But what did happen out of all this trouble was it made Moses get quiet. It made Moses separate himself. And I think that, you know, maybe God was speaking the whole time. And when Moses separated himself and he got quiet, and when Moses got the right people in his life and the right connections, he had to rearrange some things. But when he'd done that, it said God would speak to him face to face. And sometimes, you know, we're looking for maybe a secret formula, or we're looking for three steps, or, you know, it can be so simple as just, let's go for a drive. You know, places in your life that you remember where you felt the joy and the peace of God, that place where that sunset that took your breath away, that, you know, where you grew up, going back to where you experienced God's presence, going back to those places. For Moses, he was going back to what he knew, getting alone. He was in the desert for 40 years with sheep, talking to sheep and talking to God. And we all have these rhythms. It's just being willing to look a little silly sometimes, being willing to take the trip, be willing to go ahead and do it. Why? Because I want to hear from God. I want to get away. I want to hear from God for my own life, my own family, my own, because I see the world we live in, and I see things around me, and I know it's important for me not to imitate the world, and I know it's important for me to have good connections in my life. And when we do that, when we learn to listen and obey God's voice, it becomes a part of how we, it's how we live our life. It's how we live our lives. It's how we pick what we want to do. It's how we pick what career. You know, that's the best advice I feel like young people in here that I can give you on where you want to go and what you're going to do with your life. Listen for the voice of God. It just doesn't change. It's being willing to even look foolish when it sounds silly. And I'm not saying God, I mean, God can speak through his word. God can speak through a person. The Bible is the written word of God, but he will. And he does. And it's just these simple things of getting alone, listening, having the right connections in our life. And that's what I want for you. So let's bow our heads. I want to pray. If you're online, let's I want to pray that God, number one, you know, Moses had a place. Jesus had a place. It was the garden. He went up on the mountain to pray. He went on the Sea of Galilee to pray. Jesus had places that he went to pray. I know you got a place. If it's in the woods while you're hunting, if it's on the boat while you're fishing, if it's when you're playing, if it's when you're in the game, and it's when you do what you do and you know that God is with you. Go to that place as much as you can. The secret place. For David, he was in the field with the sheep, but he was doing his job, but he was also praying. He was also receiving from God. It's this separation. We got to have a time and a place. And I want to pray that God would bring the right connections into your life. That we would all have healthy accountability, healthy feedback, people looking into our lives, speaking truth. Then I ask that we just, that God, you would give us all eyes to see and ears to hear. You said in Luke, my sheep know my voice. They're not going to follow another. Help us, Lord, to know your voice. If it comes through a poem, if it comes through a moment with you, if it comes through church, if it comes through another person, if it comes through a still, small voice, help us to know your voice. Help us to look for your voice, to draw our ear to you. And we let that lead us. If you're here today and you've never really done that, I mean, you've come to church and you've heard the songs and but you've never really trusted your life. The next step you're going to take, the next job you're going to take, the next relationship that you're going to pursue, the most important part of your life right now, and putting it in His hands. Your soul, your spirit, your very being. If you've never done that, this is a good opportunity now. I want you just to surrender. Just say it in your own spirit. Lord, I surrender to you. Jesus, I give you my heart. Let it be yours. Thank you so much. In Jesus' name, everybody said amen.